Monday, and that means an awful lot of material to get caught up on over the last, since Friday night, the last 3 days almost now. Henry Nyman is standing by. Henry, it's been just as we forecast, as you forecast, it's compounding and logarithmically, if that's the right word. I don't know what word to use. It's just geometrically, it's exploding, and there's no way to slow it down. And I was just thinking in the last hour, had the Bush administration or the Obama administration, and certainly Trump has had 3 years and 4 months, to rebuild the National Strategic Reserve in terms of emergency medical supplies, masks, gloves, PPEs, ventilators above all, we wouldn't be looking at this mess now. We probably wouldn't have had to have had masks been able to be distributed to the public like they were in China. People could have masked up when they went out. We wouldn't have had all these lockdowns. It could have been worked around, other ways to deal with things. But the negligence of these administrations, 8 years with Bush, 8 years with Obama, 3+ years with Trump, have left us literally, utterly unprepared. And look at the price the economy is paying, the public is paying. This is going to cost, ultimately, in my estimation, I'm not speaking for Henry, tens of thousands of lives. The negligence, the bungling, the buffoonery, the egocentricities of people trying to look upon themselves as some kind of wartime institution. A great president, for example, who should never be second-guessed. And it's really, you can't make this stuff up. It's so bad. And ultimately, people are going to die. They are dying right now from it. And some of our frontline health workers are going to die. They already have. These are the people who should be the most protected. But there aren't enough materials to protect them. In fact, ventilators, for example, normally cost around $20,000. Governor Cuomo of New York is raising hell that they're now costing $50,000 because of states and the federal government bidding for them. And you remember last week, the Trump administration and the feds outbid the states for a lot of these just terribly needed, incredibly important medical supplies. I mean, you don't do that. It's all being handled so disgustingly that I just, this is going to go down, already has gone, is going down in history as one of the biggest boondoggles ever by a major first world government. Henry, welcome back. Let's get up to date, and hope you had a nice weekend. I know you were working. I was here getting your emails. So.
Well, it definitely has been a busy weekend, and the numbers are concerning, and your estimate of unnecessary deaths is very, very low. As you might have heard, the deadline, which was originally today for evaluating whether the separation, the lockdowns, et cetera, were going to end today or we're going to continue, was kind of decided over the weekend that it would continue till the end of the month. And there was a press conference that kind of went over a little bit of the details on why now was not the time to stop the lockdowns, although they're only partial lockdowns. It's still no national lockdown. But this wasn't the time to lift those restrictions. And the reason that was given was the estimates. And I don't know if you heard them, but the estimates were that if we did nothing and just let the pandemic continue on its merry way and didn't try to lessen its impact, that the deaths in the United States would be between 1 and 2.2 million. Right. That's how many deaths were predicted. And now they're saying there's a possibility, this is the good outcome, the good outcome is if everything was done just right, we might be able to lower that to 100 to 200,000 deaths.
And Trump, if I might say,
deaths.
Trump was very quick to say that if we could do that, everything would be really good. In other words, his program would have been very successful. Everything he does or touches, he tries to turn it into something that's going to augment his ego and image. Everything.
Right, right. But the point is that that number was an optimistic, result if we did everything right.
If.
And
absolutely.
The problem is that what's going on right now, by no stretch of the imagination, would be in the category of everything right. There's still issues with testing. There's still limitations on testing. The number of cases we're reporting are limited by who can be tested. There aren't enough kits to do the testing. They're very limited. There's priorities on doing healthcare workers and those with severe symptoms. Those that have moderate symptoms are not being tested. Those with very mild cases are not being tested. Exactly where the virus is remains unknown. And the lockdown is sporadic. It's up to the states. And the states can decide whether they're doing the governors can decide whether they're doing the entire state or only part of the state. And those decisions are based in part on limited testing. And they really don't know in some of these areas, which appear to have fairly low levels of virus, they don't really know whether they've got low levels of virus or whether they just haven't really tested that much. And so we're still flying blind.
Right.
And they're still making bad decisions. And there is no national lockdown for 2 weeks or lockdown for a month. And it's clear that there's free travel within the United States. And if you go and you say, well, there's a lockdown in New York, but there's not a lockdown in New Hampshire, then people can go up to New Hampshire from New York and spread the virus that way. They can do the same thing in the Midwest, that if you've got a big problem in Chicago, mm-hmm. but it's not too bad in Iowa, then people can just go from Chicago to Iowa. And so by having, and they may go not only because there's less virus, but because there's no lockdown. So if they want more freedom of movement or they want to, have some type of job that they can't really be involved, have in the lockdown state, they can go next door to the next state. And it's just, it's not at all perfect. It's far
it's like
from perfect.
Sieve. Like a sieve.
But even with the lockdowns where there are known high levels, they're not being implemented. Like, 5 or 6 states added a lockdown today. So they've been ignoring this situation for the last month or so. In Florida, there's all kind of warning signs that in the Miami area, all the way up in Broward, Palm Beach, that those are heavy areas with a lot of virus, that they had all these students there on spring break.
Right.
There were no limitations. They basically were packed on the beach. They brought the virus in. And those that didn't bring it in probably brought it out. And this has gone, this happened a week ago. So the idea that that we're under optimal conditions to control the virus is ridiculous. I mean, it's absurd. And what's very clear is, as predicted, the U.S. is number one in the world. And they're number one by a very wide margin now. They moved into number one position last week. And I said they would extend that. And now we're, I mean, last week, you know, one of the milestones was that we passed China, which was at 80,000. And then the next milestone was that we broke 100,000. And now, today, we're up to 163,000. And the next closest country is Italy with 100,000. So we will wow. double Italy. We will double Italy this week. So they'll be a little above 100,000, and we'll be up to 200,000, because just today we added over 23,000. So for us to get to 200,000 is only two more days. Wednesday we'll break 200,000. And Italy will still be down in the low 100,000. Italy's adding 4,000 cases a day. We're adding 24,000 cases a day. So every day, we're 20,000 more ahead of Italy. And Italy's number two. China's still back at 80. I mean, we've doubled China. China's at 80. We're at 160. So we've doubled their value. And then on the death side, we're... as I mentioned last week, we are about to be number three. The only two countries that'll have more deaths than us are Italy and Spain. And Italy and Spain, if you recall, about 10 days ago, Italy was out in front with the deaths. And there was concern that the United States is on a track to be the next Italy. And about 10 days ago, some thought, they were looking at the death rate, the daily deaths in Italy, and they thought that, well, maybe they peaked, because they were having about 350 deaths a day. And then they jumped up to 475. And that was a big deal, that they had gone up to 475 deaths in one day. And the next day, they went down to 427. And some thought, well, maybe they finally have peaked. They went from 350 to 475. Now they're already down to 427. And then the day after that, they went up to 627. So it was pretty clear that the 427 wasn't an indication that they were on their way down. They were still on their way up. And then they got up to 900 cases. And today, Italy had 881 cases. And Spain, if you recall, back on February 21st, had zero cases on the mainland. They had a grand total of two imported cases. They had zero deaths. Spain did 913 deaths today. Spain is up to 7,700 deaths. And Italy's up to 11,600 deaths. And China, officially anyway, is only at 3,000 deaths.
Well, that's another story.
And so the United States tomorrow will pass China on death. They already passed France and Iran, which I had mentioned on Friday would happen. And so we're up to 3,100 deaths.
We're going to take the cake, ladies and gentlemen. Okay.
France is at 3,000. Iran's at 2,757. So we've already passed both of them. Tomorrow, we will pass China, because how many deaths do you think we had today? We were talking about Italy was a big deal when they were 350, and then when they got to 475, that was a big deal. We had 593 deaths today. So we're at 600.
That's 350 away from Spain.
Right.
Close.
Right.
We're getting there.
Right. So we're gaining on them. And we're just beginning at our peaks.
Right.
I mean, New York is... it's got the lead, but New Jersey is kind of moving up on them, and then Michigan is adding quite a few, and California is starting to take off. Michigan added 50 deaths today, and Louisiana added 34.
Right.
And Louisiana has like 20 long-term care facilities that have infections in them. So Louisiana's death rate will skyrocket because it's going to spread in these long-term care facilities, and then most of them will die that are infected in long-term care facilities.
And it's going to go through there. Oh, it's going to wipe them out. Yeah.
Right. And it's not just Louisiana. There was one that was announced in New Jersey. And I had mentioned there's a number of long-term care facilities.
Right.
And that's what happens when the values get high. When the values get high, they've already put restrictions on. So family members can't visit. They can talk through the window with a closed, you know, they can mouth things. They can't really talk. But the healthcare workers who are at those facilities, they go home each night and they get infected. And then they go back to work. And then they pass the virus along. And then in some cases, they work at a chain of long-care health facilities, and they go from one location to another and affect multiple locations. And so the residents are at their mercy. I mean, they're locked inside. They can't see any family members, and
they don't have a chance.
Caregivers bring the virus in.
And then it just spreads
like wildfire. Then it spreads like wildfire. And that's how the case fatality rate goes up. And that's why Washington State has a higher case fatality rate, because they really started going with a long-term care facility that went to multiple care facilities because they were a large chain in the Seattle area. So the numbers are going up dramatically. And we're not going to end up with 100,000 deaths. And we're not going to end up with 200,000 deaths, because there's nothing optimal about how we're trying to control this virus. Each state can do whatever they want. And each governor can go and divide it up and say, well, we'll do this one, and we won't do that one, and we'll do it. And the ones they don't do. The virus is going up fairly dramatically on a percentage basis in the regions where it's high and with the regions where it's lower. It just doesn't make as big an impact, because they go from, you know, 50 cases to 100 cases in a couple of days, whereas the bigger ones go from 5,000 to 10,000 in a couple of days. And so the adding 5,000 in 2 or 3 days is a big deal. Adding 500 over 2 or 3 days it's a rounding error. That doesn't really affect the total. Even if there's 10 states that are doing that, it has a fairly minor effect. But they are going up.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And they don't have any restrictions. They can go and spread the virus. They can go into an area where there's heavy virus and bring the virus back. They're going about their business. They're And even in the state where there are restrictions, there are essential services. A fair number of people are still going to work. They're trying to, you know, somewhat limit the density, but there's still issues there. There's still people that take public transportation and end up being relatively crowded, just getting in the subway and going to work. They have to go to work. They don't, you know, some place like New York, they don't have a car. They take public transportation and they go to work. But they're an essential service. They're providing a service. They might be, you know, at a grocery store. You know, they're basically required to go to work, and they take public transportation. And there's not a whole lot of, you know, social distancing on a subway car. So,
well, so the report out of China today. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, the point is that we are nowhere near ideal. And this goal of, of limiting deaths to 1 or 200,000 just isn't going to be met. And, I mean, one possibility is that, you know, the virus doesn't like sunlight. The sunlight, you know, is not the virus's friend. And so...
And that has to do with the UV radiation. Keep that in mind.
Right.
It's not so much the temperature. I had a story yesterday where it does just well at the very fine at 98 degrees temperature. Go ahead.
Right. And that's what's happening. The days are getting longer. So there's more sunlight in the northern hemisphere. And the virus isn't able to hang around as long on surfaces. It gets inactivated. People tend to go outside more rather than stay inside. And so all of those things work against the virus. And that's part of the reason something like flu is seasonal. And, you know, it declines over the summer and it makes it come back in the fall. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, the flu has followed that seasonal pattern. And SARS followed that pattern, which is a close relative of the current SARS-CoV-2, is, you know, obviously closely related to SARS-CoV. And
you could almost call it SARS 2.0, couldn't you, Henry?
Right. They stuck the two in at the end. But anyway, it's they are closely related, and it's very possible that as the days get longer. And, you know, in combination with the social distancing, that the number of cases will go down. And, but that doesn't mean that it won't come back in the fall, because it's a different situation than it was back in 2003, it was, much more limited. And when it came back, it was missing this 29 nucleotide deletion, which may have played a role in its expansion in 2003. So it wasn't necessarily as transmissible, and it was in civet cats, and they culled all the civet cats, and they shut down all the wet markets, and basically, the virus, at least reportedly, at least based on reported cases, disappeared. It was the last cases were in 2004, or early 2004, and that was it until 2019, and there's a related virus.
So, okay, a couple.
I'm sorry. Quick, what were you going to say? Go ahead.
Quick notes about social distancing. I have another report. This is from Chinese scientists, and I believe they were from Wuhan. I may be wrong. They say in reality, 6 feet is not enough. They're saying 4 meters is a correct social distance. You want to stay away from this, you go 12 feet plus. That's so we really need to double it if we're going to do social distancing. That's what the Chinese are saying. I'm just reporting that as a statement.
Yeah.
Of fact.
Well, that was based on a bus, and
that's right. You saw the same story. I think I sent it
to
you.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. So I saw that. What wasn't clear was whether they confirmed that the person that got infected was infected by, you know, the other person on the bus and wasn't
right.
infected by someone else. And
the potential
I
is
mean, they can get a good idea if they actually did sequencing on each of them. And I wasn't sure. I didn't look at it that closely to see if there was that mm-hmm. type of sequence confirmation. Mm-hmm. I know they used, they had video on the bus, and they kind of saw where these people were and how close they were and where they sat. And so they could do the calculations you just gave as far as how far apart they were and where they were on the bus and whether they got any closer than that. So they could do that part. But whether they actually isolated a virus from the person that subsequently was infected and compared that to the, you know, who supposedly infected that person, I don't know. I mean, it would be more convincing if they did that. That's one of the problems with a lot of these experiments, where they're basing it on one or two events, and they're assuming that A infected B, and they don't take it the extra step to show that the sequence in B is the same as in A. You know, and so that would be more convincing. And speaking of sequence, I wanted to kind of go over a little bit of sequence data, which kind of gives an indication of what is going on in New York and New Jersey, at least New York. But what's going on in New York is probably what's going on in New Jersey because of the proximity. And I know there's been a little bit of confusion when I say something like it's the Italian strain, and I've had people ask, well, is the Italian strain related to the Wuhan strain? And so I thought it would be useful for me to go over a little bit of what I mean when I say it's the Italian strain or the Wuhan strain or the ORF8 mutation.
And the Iranian strain, which went to Italy,
we think.
But go ahead.
Yeah. Right. And so basically, there's the initial sequence that came out of Wuhan, and that's kind of noted as the reference sequence. So there's a sequence that's in many of the initial cases in Wuhan, and that's kind of what the sequence looks like. And just to give you an idea, the sequence has about 30,000 letters. And these strains are based on a limited number of changes in those 30,000 letters. And they're very small. They're generally just a couple of changes. Now, some people refer to those changes as mutations. Scientifically, they're usually referred to as polymorphisms. The reason they use the term polymorphism is so that position changed, but sometimes mutation is used for a change that has a definite effect on the behavior of the virus, whereas a polymorphism says, well, it went from, you know, A to T or G to C, you know, there's only four letters, and it kind of changed from one to the other. But whether that particular change has an effect on the function of that protein or the behavior of the virus, or it simply represents a change that you can use to identify that lineage, is kind of open. So to define the lineage, it doesn't have to be a change that changes the protein. I mean, it can be a silent change. They're called homologous and non-homologous. Homologous means that the DNA, or in this case, it's the RNA, but anyway, the gene changes at the nucleotide level, but it doesn't change the protein because there's redundancy. So essentially the protein, the amino acid is the same regardless of which of the two versions you have, but you can use the versions to distinguish them. So when I talked about the ORF8 mutation lineage, that was a virus that only had two changes that defined it. That lineage, it had one change in ORF8, which actually did change the protein, and it had one other change upstream. So those two changes kind of signaled, that's the ORF8 mutation. And that was useful, especially looking at the sequences in the U.S. The first five sequences in the U.S., if you recall, the first one was in the Seattle area, the second one was in Chicago. The third and fourth ones were in L.A. and Orange County in Southern California. Uh-huh. And the fifth one was in Phoenix in Arizona. Now, it turned out that four out of five of those, everything except for Orange County, California, all had that same ORF8 mutation, and they all had the same upstream polymorphism. So there were two changes. And four out of the five of the first sequences in the United States had both of those changes. And so that was kind of called the ORF8 mutation, or lineage, I should say. And then it turned out that they were still not all exactly the same. And the one up in the Seattle area had one additional change. And that additional change wasn't seen in any of the other four. And subsequently was shown to be relatively rare. And it was that additional, that third change that led to the suggestion that virus, which is the first one in the U.S., was transmitted in the Seattle area. Because when they had the high school student a month later or 6 weeks later, right, that was identified as the first community spread in the area, had that same third mutation. So it was the ORF8 lineage. It had ORF8 and the one upstream, and then the rare one it also had. So the simplest explanation was that one that came in ended up being transmitted in Washington State. And that gave rise to this one 6 weeks later, which by then was all over Seattle or just north of Seattle. And then it turned out that particular isolate at that point had actually picked up two more mutations or two more polymorphisms. So it really had five changes from the original reference strain. Mm-hmm. And there was a program there. It was called the Flu Study. And they were actually collecting quite a few samples in the Seattle area. And part of the study was that if you had flu symptoms and you were influenza negative, then you gave permission for them to actually use it in a research study and take your sample and see if it had SARS-CoV-2. And so that's how they were able to get a lot of sequences in the area. And what they found was initially all of the sequences had those five differences. They had the two that defined the ORF8. They had the one that was kind of unusual that was in the original one, the first one in the U.S. And then they had the two more that were specific to the Seattle area. So they had all five of those changes. So you could tell that one came from the other. I mean, this was just an expansion of this initial isolate. And then that spread. I mean, that same virus with all five of those changes was present on the Grand Princess cruise, the one that basically went down to Mexico and came back, and nobody paid any attention that they were infected, and they all, you know, left the ship, and afterwards one of them died and was positive, and another one was tested and was positive, and that's when they went after the second voyage that went out to Hawaii and that went down to Mexico, because I think 46 or something of the people on the first cruise took a second cruise, and so they thought that there was a good possibility that that had that. But those that left ended up going back home, and they basically seeded that virus all over the United States and Canada. And many of the first cases in various states, like Minnesota and I think Tennessee, and it was up in Canada, those were all subsequently shown to be that Seattle sequence. Okay. So that gives you an idea of what I'm talking about with the Seattle. The Seattle sequence really has all five of those changes. They all have that. And then as they evolve, they might have one or two or three additional ones. They're all the original Wuhan sequence, but they've got those five changes. As it turns out, the ORF8 mutation was also responsible for the outbreak in New Rochelle, New York. So the first case that really got the New York going, that sequence was released. It had the ORF8 mutation. It had the one in ORF8. It had the one upstream, but it didn't have the other Seattle one. It actually had other mutations that were circulating in Europe. Right. So that indicated that virus didn't come from Seattle. It came from Europe. It was actually in Spain, and it was in a few other countries in Europe. And it indicated that was really seeded from Europe as opposed to being seeded from China. Although it probably went originally from China to Europe to New Rochelle, but it didn't have the Seattle markers or the ones that distinguished the West Coast versions of that ORF8.
Mm-hmm.
So the new information is, the question was, what exactly is circulating in New York? Since New York has its explosion of cases at a very short doubling time. And in addition to that one in New Rochelle, if you recall, there was a traveler, which is one of the first ones in New York, that came from Iran.
Yeah.
And traveled to Iran. Mm-hmm. And that sequence was released, and that had the sequence from Iran. And Iran didn't have any of these five that are in Seattle or the ones that are in the ORF8. They had a totally different marker. There was one in particular that was in Iran, and it was in this one also. So that was as expected. And then NYU released four additional sequences. They didn't give details. They just said they were in New York. And it turned out that the first one that they released also had the Iran marker. And the next three were the lineage that was present in Italy. So they had the Italy marker, and that was in three out of the four that were done by NYU. And that hinted that possibly the reason the explosion in New York was so dramatic was because they had actually been seeded more with the Italian sequence. Okay. And then over the weekend, NYU released 16 additional sequences. And all 16 of those either came from Manhattan or Nassau. They gave the location of, they gave the age and gender also, but they gave the location of each of those 16 cases. And all 16 of those cases were the Italian sequence.
Huh. All
so,
of them.
So 16 out of 16. Correct. So in reality, the NYU one actually did 20 of them, and 19 out of the 20 were the Italian sequence, and the only one that wasn't was the first one they released, which was another sequence from Iran. So that data strongly suggests that it was the Italian sequence that seeded New York, and that accounted for most of the cases.
Uh-huh.
And that's why New York has exploded with these cases, and probably why New York has the large number of deaths that are associated with it, because that had a higher case fatality rate in Italy. And Italy was a very difficult situation. I think something like 50 healthcare workers have died, not infected, have died 50. In wow. in northern Italy, correct?
Yeah.
And it is still going strong. I mean, there's still 800 that are dying on a daily basis. 800 or 900 are dying on a daily
mm-hmm.
basis.
Mm-hmm.
And the Italian sequence has also moved into Spain, and that's a large part of the reason that Spain got so out of control. And I had mentioned that they had 2,500 fans had gone to a soccer game in Milan. You know, they had taken a tour and gone to the game and come back, and some had symptoms. And they probably, it was Valencia, it was their team. So in the Valencia area would have been seeding of the sequence from Italy, and there's probably a lot of, you know, travel back and forth anyway. And Italy is what caused the virus to take off in Europe, and that accounted in part at least for what was going on in Spain, and then what's going on in France now. I mean, France has quite a few cases also now, and probably in part has to do with what's going on in the UK, where they're starting to take off. I mean, France has 3,000 deaths. We just passed it. We only have about 100 more than they do. And they had 418 deaths today. So they still, you know, they're above where Italy was 10 days ago. So they're on the road to, you know, that same type of path.
We should mention, we're talking about the UK, Boris Johnson's government, allegedly, and there's good reports, is, I won't say enraged, but they're not at all happy with China, because their research, their intelligence has shown that the Chinese have vastly underestimated the number of infected and deaths that they've had. Not a big surprise. We knew that, but we've been going on the official numbers, because that's all we have to do. We can't speculate here. But they're saying that at least 1 million cases in China. Wouldn't surprise me, frankly.
Yeah, well that's part of the issue here is, you know, how high is this going to go? And right. then the other thing that came out over the weekend with the United States was that just what I said about the lower numbers and the higher numbers, that the doubling time in the United States was relatively high. And it didn't matter whether it was a big city where it's getting a lot of attention because it's going from 5,000 to 10,000 in 2 or 3 days, or whether it's a small area where they're going from, you know, 50 to 100 in 2 or 3 days. So the virus is all over the United States, as expected. And some areas are reporting higher than others, but there's rapid growth going in all of these areas.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, you know, is driving these predictions that there's the potential to have this large number. I mean, the same prediction that said the United States would have 1 or 2 million deaths predicted that if measures weren't taken worldwide, mm-hmm. there would be in the neighborhood of 40 million deaths. So this is in the same ballpark as 1918. And that's part of the reason.
We only have 5 minutes, 4 minutes. If we lose 1 to 2 million people here, when would you project those people would perish? Within the next 12 months? What's your guess?
Yeah, all of these projections are in the next 12 months. I mean, there's two different scenarios. One scenario is that the virus will just keep on rolling and it'll just be one big expansion and it'll just keep going right into the summer months. And then the other one would be that it would take a break, that it would be in the fall. I mean, it would be in the spring, and then it would fade over the summer, but then it would come back with a vengeance in the fall. And there's actually some sequence data that would support that, because some of the more recent sequences have been released from Italy. There are a lot of sequences coming out. I haven't even had a chance to look through it. I mean, there's literally, you know, hundreds of sequences that are coming out on a daily basis now. So there's, I think it's something like 2,800 sequences, or no, it's 2,949 is what that she said right now. So it's, you know, it's 3,000 sequences, and they go up daily. So anyway, some of the more recent sequences, generally these sequences are about 2 weeks old as far as collection date. So sequences released today are ones that were done in the middle of March. And so some of the Italian sequences have dual infections, so they're infected with two different viruses, and they've got a lot of polymorphism in this sequence. And
two different coronaviruses.
Correct. Two different coronaviruses. So you can tell they're two different lineages. I mean, you have these markers that kind of define these lineages, then you get one that basically gives a mixed signal. So it basically says when you get a signal at a given position, there's two different sequences there. So you get like a double peak there, you know, one underneath the other. And and you can see that there's a mixed signal at each of these positions. And there's a lot of different positions. And so they've kind of evolved, and they've got a number of these polymorphisms. So unlike these initial ones, like the ORF8 that just had two, and then it went up to five, these might have 10, or if they're mixed signals, they might have 15 different polymorphisms in that one isolate. Turns out that in some cases it's two different viruses that are together, but they have quite a few. And the point is that gives the virus the opportunity to recombine and to mix and match those two combinations. And then they can, if the population, like in Italy, since there's been a lot of cases, if there's a fair amount of immunity that's been built up by those that have been infected, then those that have these dual infections, a virus can emerge that escapes that immunity. And so, and then that will end up dominating, because what happens is the older viruses won't be able to spread because there's too much immunity, and they can't really spread the infection because the immune system knocks them out too quickly. But the ones that are resistant to that then take over, and then that's all that's left. So the only one that's circulating is a virus that isn't susceptible to the immunity against the initial strain, and that one is immune to that population. And then that becomes dominant, and the only thing that's circulating is the one with the immunity. And then it goes over, like, in the fall, where the days are getting shorter and the virus can spread more easily, and it's getting colder, so people are inside, and if there aren't any restrictions, they go back to school, and you have all of these, you know, high density situations, and you start playing sports again, and you just have these different opportunities for the virus to spread quickly, especially if it's evolved and is no longer susceptible to the immunity that was generated in the spring. So the fall comes along, and then the virus comes out with a vengeance because it's very homogeneous now. It's gotten rid of the versions that happened in the spring because they can't thrive. They've basically been replaced by this new version, and then the new version comes, and the old population that had been infected in the spring do not have immunity to the fall version, and it takes off like wildfire because that's all you have is the version that has escaped the immunity that developed 6 months earlier.
Got it. Okay. All right. Pretty good summary of an awful lot of information. I've just a deluge. I can't even begin to describe to all of you out there how many different stories there are. And the theories run the gamut. They're just all over the map. And some people say it's a complete fraud. They're still doing that, a complete hoax. These people are dying of other reasons and blah, blah, blah. Be very careful, all of you out there. And if you want the reality of the situation, you're getting it right here. You're doing the best that anyone can do with Dr. Henry Nyman. He is a brilliant virologist. Very honored to have him here as we've worked together for many, many years now. And you know you're going to get the real story here. Henry, one really 30-second comment. That's all we have time for. This will continue as it is now, and pretty soon President Trump is going to be scratching his comb over. He won't know what to do.
Yeah, well, I agree that the April deadline will come and go. Oh. The virus will not be under control.
No.
He and won't that's where we are.
Yeah. Thank you. Talk to you tomorrow night.
Okay, very good. Take care.
Dr. Henry Nyman, we'll be right back with you in 21 hours. Be safe. Use common sense. This is not a joke. It's a real deal, and it is being used for other things. We know that, geopolitically speaking.